It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We were enjoying a historically quiet tornado season. That is until last Sunday, when it all changed very quickly. For 3 days this week, dozens of twisters raked across not only the plains, but also the south, killing 38 people, destroying hundreds of homes. April and May are the busiest times of year for twisters, particularly the deadly ones, and historically the number of tornadoes spikes in these 2 months. Here in Iowa, last Sunday's storm claimed two lives. A woman who lived near Hedrick in southeast Iowa died from injuries suffered after the collapse of a barn. A second woman died near Kinross, southeast of Iowa City, after a barn or some equipment fell on her during Sunday's storm. The National Weather Service confirmed that a tornado touched down in northeast Wapello County. That was about 3:20 this past Sunday afternoon. The tornado then moved into Keokuk and Johnson counties. The EF1 tornado had peaks of wind speed of 108 miles per hour, according to the National Weather Service. Joining me now to talk about the middle of our severe weather season, Bill Gallas, professor of meteorology at the Department of Geological and Atmospheric Science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Ben.
Alan Sarnetsky with us as well in our Cedar Falls studio, professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Alan.
Let me start off with you, Alan, and have you both reflect on this outbreak of storms and tornadoes this past week. Alan, I, according to the information I have, an average of 60 deaths per year nationwide, according to in tornado deaths, severe weather deaths. We jumped to 38 in just a few days. Is this atypical?
No, certainly with the spring storms, you can have a sudden onset of deadly tornadoes, and the death count can go up rather quickly. What has been unusual this year is how long we made it into the year before we actually had any tornado fatalities. Things were going very well through Sunday. We did not have any tornado-related deaths in the U.S. so far this year.
Mm-hmm. Bill Gallas, what are your thoughts on this outbreak and the high number of deaths?
I agree with Alan there. The last couple years, if you look, it seems the majority of the fatalities each year end up happening on just, you know, 1 or 2 days. Last year, for instance, May was the bad month. I think there were 40-some fatalities just in May, and most of those were on one day, the 20th, when Moore, Oklahoma was hit.
Mm-hmm. Is this a case, I'm just trying to think how we should think about this. Is this like when you get your so-called perfect storm that it all comes at once because those random elements happen to come together at one time, Bill?
Right. We know there are certain ingredients that you need to get very strong tornadoes, and it's kind of hard to get them to all come together just right. So it tends to only happen a few times a year. And certainly starting on Sunday and lasting into mainly on Monday, we had that set up over a pretty large chunk of the country to our south.
Mm-hmm. Alan, we've had a cooler than usual past few months, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Coming out of last fall, actually, our climate trend has been to have some cooler seasons. Our winter season was definitely below normal, and so far this spring, we're definitely on track for maintaining that cool spring.
Mm-hmm. Does that affect our severe weather season at all, Alan?
Well, if you don't have as much low-level instability, which mostly is measured by higher temperatures as well as higher moisture content, that's one of the principal ingredients for severe weather. And since we have been cooler, and cooler air will typically have much less water vapor in it, we haven't had that first set of ingredients for severe weather. So that's actually kept us on the quiet side.
And Bill, I suppose for that very reason, we have much of the severe weather to the south of us.
Right. In fact, even this outbreak that took place on Sunday, the warmth had trouble making it very far into Iowa. So it was really places along or south of Interstate 80 that ran into the severe weather, the most substantial severe weather on this past Sunday.
We have a few minutes with Alan Sarnetsky and Bill Gallas to talk about severe weather. If you have a question about severe weather, about tornadoes, please join us, 1-866-780-9100. Bill Gallas, you've been doing some research in this area. What have you been up to lately?
Lately, I've switched gears and am not looking so much at the tornadoes themselves, but we're doing a lot of studies of the computer models that forecasters rely on heavily to forecast the weather. We've discovered there are certain kinds of thunderstorm systems that the computer models routinely do a bad job with. For instance, we have a type of thunderstorm system known as a bow echo. So it looks kind of like a bow that you'd have in an archery set that often produces very damaging winds. And we find that, you know, for some reason, it's especially hard for the computer models to forecast those right. So we're trying to look at some of these different types of systems and concentrate on the ones that the biggest problems are happening with to try to figure out, you know, what is going wrong and what might be able to be changed in the models so that forecasters can get a little bit better guidance from the models.
So we're working in the direction of right now we know what storms can produce tornadoes, but not with any certainty, right? And we have a lot of false positives?
Right, that's correct. Although there's some exciting new things going on, especially with radar technology, you know, that might help us to do a better job of knowing which spinning storm is going to produce a tornado and which spinning storm is not. That's been the biggest challenge, which is why so many times if you hear a tornado warning, you know, you don't really end up having a tornado touch down.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the new radar techniques that you're...
So there's really two new types of radar. One has actually been installed at all the National Weather Service offices in the country in just the last year or two, and it's known as dual polarization radar. We sometimes abbreviate it dual pole. So this kind of radar sends out the energy in two planes, so that you could picture these waves that are in a horizontal plane and these waves that are in a vertical. And based on the energy that comes back in both directions, we can get an idea of the shape of the raindrops, the hailstones, the snowflakes that are out there. And we can also get an idea of how uniform the particles are. So, for instance, if the radar is just seeing rain, raindrops that are big actually look like hamburger buns when they fall. You know, if you look at kids' drawings of raindrops, they usually look like a tear shape.
I see.
But turns out that's not right. They look like hamburger buns. Hailstones, when they fall, tend to tumble. And so they're going to look round to the radar. So this kind of radar already is helping us to better know where the large hail is happening when we have a severe storm. And in addition, when a tornado is picking up debris, the debris is also tumbling, so it also tends to look fairly round to the radar. So the new radar is really helping us to pinpoint better where the tornadoes are.
So if a shed is picked up or something, a chair is picked up, you will actually be able to see that on this new type of radar?
Well, the radar is looking at a piece of land that might be a half mile by a half mile square. So it's going to be seeing that chair probably along with many other things. But yes, it's actually able to kind of give us an image of what all is being thrown into the air in that volume.
Meteorologists Bill Gallus of Iowa State University and Alan Czarnecki with us this half hour. Alan, let me toss you this question from John, who is listening in Mason City. John says, I heard that El Nino this year is extremely strong. How will that affect Iowa?
Actually, we're in neutral conditions right now, and it looks like we probably will stay neutral in terms of El Nino and La Nina through the summer months.
And neutral means?
We're actually not in El Nino
okay.
right now, right?
Okay.
Yeah, the trend has been that there's an indication that perhaps by this fall, I think there's about a 60% chance or so that we will start to move into an El Nino pattern. But actually, right now we're considered to be neutral, mm-hmm. and sometimes that makes it a little bit challenging in terms of giving an outlook for will severe weather, for example, be more common this summer. Well, we don't have any El Nino record to go on right now, so that's one less tool, I guess, that we have for making that forecast.
And remind us, Alan, El Nino has to do with temperatures in water. Thousands of miles away.
Right. It's the temperatures in the mid-Pacific, the mid-equatorial Pacific Ocean, and there's actually a connection between those surface temperatures of water and actually the atmospheric circulations that set up in response to that. And so the effects of something like warm ocean water in the Pacific can actually influence weather conditions across North America. The correlation with El Nino to weather in Iowa is kind of a weak correlation. You can certainly find years where we had maybe a lot of severe weather and others where we didn't have very much for pretty much the same El Nino conditions. So other parts of the country have a little bit stronger correlation, especially the southern states and to some degree the northern states as well.
The past few days, 38 people killed in the nation, two in Iowa due to Twister's severe weather. Alan, why don't you take us through, remind us of the basics of tornado safety?
Well, the safest place to be in a tornado is underground. It's We're trying to, I guess, get out there that the strongest tornadoes are probably not survivable unless you're underground and you were to take on a direct hit. Old-fashioned underground tornado bunkers are not perhaps as common as they had been, say, 100 years ago or so, when many farmsteads did have an underground shelter. Lacking something like that, the basement would be the next best place to seek shelter. Lacking a basement, the lowest level of the home. Certainly in both cases, you would want to protect yourself as much as possible from flying debris. That would mean to avoid windows. Typically, small windowless rooms are relatively safe in structures, closets, bathrooms, again, as long as there aren't any windows. Mm-hmm. If you're in a mobile home, we still strongly recommend that you abandon the mobile home and seek shelter in a often established villages or communities will have storm shelters, and they're often concrete, and those would be the very best place to go. Perhaps it's a community center of some sort. Likewise, in a car, the best advice is still to abandon a car and seek shelter elsewhere.
Bill Gallus, I wonder, when we say an average of 60 deaths per year in the nation due to tornadoes and severe weather, do we know how many of these deaths come from ignoring the basics of safety that Alan just spelled out?
You know, I think the general view has been a majority of the deaths have been from people that didn't really do what they were supposed to. As Alan alluded to, we've had some extremely strong tornadoes over the last few years, like Moore and Joplin. And sadly, in some of those cases, people were doing the best job that they could, you know, maybe hiding out in a bathtub or a closet, and they still lost their lives.
Right. Joplin didn't have many basements, and a good number of the households did not have basements there.
Right. You know, I think, though, for instance, on Sunday here in Iowa, you know, I just spoke with some of the National Weather Service people last night, and they said it was really rather sad. In both cases, the two fatalities, you know, you would never think of being in a barn. A barn is not a good shelter to be in a tornado. So, you know, in that situation, the people weren't really in the best spot. I know there were some stories down in Arkansas where people died, that people refused to go to a shelter and lost their lives because of that. So you really do increase your chances of survival greatly if you follow the guidelines of where to go for safety.
Mm-hmm. Storm watchers are out and are being used by people to predict severe weather, to spot tornadoes. How many spotters are there, for instance, in Iowa, and how are they trained?
Well, I don't know if Alan has a better guess to that. I would not be surprised if we have well over 1,000 spotters in Iowa. The National Weather Service tries to get out to almost every county in the state, usually starting about the middle of winter and trying to wrap up their training sessions early in spring before the main tornado season arrives in Iowa. And you know, really all you have to do is show up for one of these roughly one-hour presentations where you learn a lot about the structure of a thunderstorm, the safe places to be, you know, things you want to look for to be able to tell that the storm is spinning and where the tornado might drop down. And once you attend a session like that, you are a certified storm spotter.
Mm-hmm. Alan, if you are a certified storm spotter, are you putting yourself in more danger than someone, I assume, who would just seek shelter, right?
Well, certainly you are. But as part of the training that the spotters would receive, they know where to position themselves, and they may also get some guidance from the National Weather Service as to where the storms are expected to form. So they could try and do their observations from a little bit safer location. But certainly the general public is best advised to take shelter when a warning is issued. That's the most important action that people can take with a warning. A watch indicates that people should remain vigilant, go about your normal activities, but make sure that you have some way of receiving any updates on the weather situation, either through your cell phone. A weather radio is still one of the very best ways to get that information. Radio, television still are good sources.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one call before we have to end this conversation. Anthony is with us in Fredericksburg. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Anthony. What's on your mind?
I have a question. I'm wondering if possibly maybe the last 5-10 years, what type of data is there to show maybe the frequency of tornadoes are getting higher or lower, and as well as their strength. And with that in mind, is there anything that we can maybe think of for the future with this?
Thanks, Anthony. Who wants to tackle that, Alan or Bill? Jump in.
Well, I'll let Bill take it as well, but what I know about the trends, at least since 1950, for the U.S. as a whole, is that there is no clear trend that tornadoes are becoming more frequent, nor are they becoming more destructive. Certainly, we've had a lot of very recent strong tornadoes, and that does capture our attention. But if you look at about a 50-plus year period, at least the data that I've looked at does not give a clear indication of an increase in either number or destructiveness. But Bill may have some other ideas.
No, I think Alan hit the nail on the head. In fact, it's rather frustrating. The public obviously really cares about tornadoes. They're the most violent storm on Earth. But we need a much longer period of record. We've only been observing tornadoes in great detail since 1950, and there are a lot of flaws in the record. For instance, if you look at just tornadoes of any strength, it looks like we're having more and more every year, but it's well known that this is simply because we have lots of tornado chasers going out there trying to find them. We've made the public more aware that they need to call in reports of tornadoes. If you look at stronger tornadoes, we rank them from 0 to 5. If you look at level 2 or higher, if anything, there's been maybe a tiny decrease in number. So, you know, what Alan said is exactly right. We don't really have any evidence that the number, the frequency, or the intensity is getting worse. And I know when 2011 happened, you know, there were over 500 deaths. And that got a lot of people thinking, oh, this is a trend and we're in for a rough future. But then 2012 and 2013 and 2014 up until a few days ago were among the quietest years ever. So it's almost like the atmosphere is trying to average itself out.
Mm-hmm. So what does that tell you when we have that kind of 500 in 1 year, the next 2 years very calm? Does that indicate a more turbulent weather pattern, or doesn't it indicate anything, Bill?
You know, I don't think it indicates anything. In 2011, it was just a lot of bad luck. You know, the tornado in Joplin was an amazing example where the tornado pretty much touched down on the west side of town. You know, you can't imagine a worst-case scenario. It wasn't on the ground for very long ahead of time so that the people had a lot of warning. And so Joplin took a direct hit, Birmingham, Tuscaloosa. So we just happened to have a lot of fairly large communities be hit. There was a study a few years ago that suggested a strong tornado could easily hit Chicago, and if it did, you could actually have 10,000 deaths. So it's just sort of a matter of—
In this day and age, 10,000 deaths.
Right. I think that was assuming, you know, if people really aren't sheltering. But I think a lot of the homes in Chicago are—it's extremely densely populated, homes very close together— And I believe a lot of them are not thought of as being very well constructed or having basements.
You mentioned these are the most violent storms on Earth, and studying them is a problem, isn't it, Alan? Because you have to have instruments that can survive this, and they're here for a few minutes or maybe an hour, a tornado, and then it disappears, right?
Right. That makes it a real challenge. We do have some mobile tools now, though, that we didn't perhaps even 10 or 15 years ago. Radar units that are mounted on trucks that are used to chase the tornadoes and actually gather data while the tornado is going on. We had completed the second of a large-scale national data gathering experiment, Vortex 2 it was known as, where we had a lot of instrumentation out in the field trying to collect data while the tornadoes are going on. So we certainly have made improvements in that area, but tornadoes don't always cooperate and allow themselves to be measured very well.
Now, I understand 15 counties in Iowa have received the National Weather Service's Storm Ready designation. Bill, can you clue us in on as to what that is?
I'm not an expert on that, but I believe what has to happen is some of the may. In fact, Alan may.
Okay, well, we can turn it over to Alan. We have just a few minutes left. So,
sure.
Alan, yeah.
Well, I think there is a program that the National Weather Service has, and there are a few steps that are involved with that. Some training sessions and a few requirements that have to be met. And once a community has done all of those, they can be considered to be storm ready. And certainly we would encourage all communities in the state to look into that with the National Weather Service and see what that might entail.
Bill, I know you've been doing some other wind research, not having to do with severe weather, but with our power here in Iowa as the second or third leading state in terms of creating wind energy. What have you been looking at?
Well, it turns out the utility companies often have to make a guesstimate as to what power they'll provide on day two, and it's very difficult to forecast the winds accurately, 24 to 48 hours ahead of time. up at the height where most turbines are, about 80 meters above the ground or 250 feet above the ground. And so we're looking at ways to try to better forecast wind at that level so that the power companies can be saved millions of dollars. And you know, the exciting thing about that is any savings that you can make in this area would help wind energy to look even more attractive to other perhaps other utility companies.
Let's give you each of you a crack at predicting. Maybe there'll just be dead silence. I don't know. in the final minute, Alan, what can you say about the rest of our spring and into our summer?
Oh, I think it looks like there are equal chances that we will be above or below normal or near normal, actually, for our temperatures and our precipitation this summer anyway. I think for the rest of the spring, and meteorologists would, I guess, consider spring only to extend through the month of May, it does look like we're in for a bit of a wet pattern. So I do expect the wetter weather to continue.
Okay, and I guess this is an addition of dueling meteorologists. Bill Gallus, you want to go any farther out on the limb than Alan did?
No, he's reporting what the official people who are paid to do this, the climate data people, have issued that outlook. And I think it looks pretty good. I know here in Iowa, you know, there's a chance we'll have a better severe weather event, perhaps more active over a larger part of the state Wednesday or Thursday next week. But then it looks like it may cool off again for another week. So that again would, you know, lower the amount of probably rain and thunderstorms. So, yeah, temperature-wise, it'll probably end up roughly normal. And I think May will end up wet.
Are we done with our drought then, I guess?
Oh, well, we've certainly seen some improvement in that with the rains that we've got, also with the snow that we received over the winter. I think we've definitely made some improvements on that. There are other parts of the country that still have a ways to go, but certainly some positive signs.
Alan, a few words for our farmers out there eager to get in the fields and plant. When can they do it?
Well, like I say, it looks like out through about the middle of the month, the most likely scenario is that we will continue to have above normal precipitation. So, you know, there's no way of indicating if that's going to be heavy or not. So, you know, it looks like in the near term, maybe not ideal conditions, but things probably will eventually straighten out later in the month, if not before.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Alan Czarnecki, professor of meteorology at the University of Northern Iowa. Bill Gallus of Iowa State University, where he's professor of meteorology in the Department of Geological and Atmospheric Science. Alan and Bill, what a pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll listen back to a conversation I had last year with Neil deGrasse Tyson, director of the Hayden Planetarium, renowned astrophysicist, science advocate, and he's also host of the new Cosmos series. I spoke with him last year. We'll hear my conversation with him as sort of an encore when we come back. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.